Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Hey, rocket scientists, look no further than the next big thinker. First in class, first in innovation, intelligence, SUVs from Mercedes-Benz. The 2021 Mercedes-Benz GLE. Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Their SUVs now are remarkable. Check out their website. 42 years NFL films, usually an hour or two. Today, an hour or three. I'm so excited for Greg Cosell because I have so many legitimate questions. He joins us now live. So I was saying with Matt Stafford in the Rams is that there's fewer tricks. There's fewer deception. There's less play action. There is a lot more, my eyes tell me, a lot more straight drop and let her go. We got a lot of good receivers. And I looked up a next-gen stat today, and they are doing...
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah, they're doing... They went from 33% play action to 24-25, so they're doing a little less play action stuff and more throwing it with Matt. What do you make with Stafford and Tampa, and what do you make about that stat?
Well, it's interesting you mention that because one of the things that's really stood out watching the tape, which of course can't have play action, is they lead the NFL in empty sets through three games. They're putting Stafford in empty sets. Sometimes, as they did this week against Tampa, they go with four receivers to one side, very difficult to defend. So it's a 4-by-1 set. But what empty sets do, everybody immediately says, well, it makes the defense declare before the snap. That's one thing it does for sure. But also defenses will play empty sets in certain ways. You know what you're going to get. There's a tendency predictability of coverage when you line up in empty sets. And Stafford, and this is not talked about a lot, Colin, but Stafford is incredibly smart. And so when you get a tendency predictability of coverage, then Stafford can go to work. And the route concepts, of course, with Sean McVay are so good, both attacking man coverage with a lot of bunch concepts, attacking zone coverage with 2, 3, and even 4-man route combinations. They're just really, really good with a quarterback now that is just a high-level thrower.
All right, we saw Justin Herbert with a bad O-line not win a bunch of games but set some rookie records. Now we get Justin Herbert with a new coaching system and a very solid offensive line. What does the film say with a young Chargers phenom quarterback?
Well, you know what? It's interesting to me watching Herbert because he's playing exactly the way most of us thought he was not going to do when he came out of Oregon. Because he's playing with a very refined feel for the timing and rhythm of the passing game. He gets the ball out to the right receiver at the right time. He does not wait in the pocket to see if something downfield develops, unless it's a called downfield throw or a shot play. He almost looks robotic and mechanical at times in a good way, Colin. He plays incredibly efficiently. You know, he's not one of those guys that sits and sits and sits and gets stuck in the pocket. The ball comes out.
Yeah. So Aaron Rodgers, a 2-pass drive. It is amazing. It is crazy. He throws off his back foot on every play now, and it's just accepted. It's his own style. I thought Green Bay was the more physical, better team. I thought they should have won. I thought Garoppolo's drive was underrated. We didn't want to talk about that. But let's just talk Aaron against San Francisco. What'd you see you like?
Yeah, I've been doing this a long time, Colin, and maybe I'm jaded sometimes, but he made two throws in that game that to me were ridiculous. The 12-yard touchdown he threw to Valdez-Scantling early in the fourth quarter on what we call a double smash route, double smash concept. I mean, it's not just the throw. I don't know how many guys would even think about that as the throw and turn it loose. And it was just an unbelievable throw. Yeah. And then, of course, the first one to start the final game-winning drive. That throw was ridiculous. Another throw, I don't know if there's two other guys in the NFL that would have actually turned that loose. I mean, Fred Warner got incredible depth as an underneath defender, way deeper than you would teach anybody. He missed it by 5 inches, but just making the throw, turning it loose was unbelievable. You know, he's the last 2 weeks, he's throwing the ball exceptionally well.
Well, so is Josh Allen again after a bumpy first week. Now, he can. There are times that accuracy can be an issue with him. It was at college. It was early. But do you see him reverting back to what you saw in his best moments last year after a bumpy opening week?
Yeah, this game was like last year. Again, you know, this is what we have so far this season. Two games where he struggled with his ball location. And then this past week against Washington where he played like the Allen of 2020, strong mix of pocket efficiency and second reaction playmaking. He was much more precise with his ball placement than he had been in the first two games. It started actually with his first throw of the game, but he's such a strong thrower. You know, he's another guy that he won't always throw with his feet set. I think that's just the way he is. You mentioned that about Rodgers. I think Allen is one of those guys that there are just times he's not going to throw with his feet set. And that's the way he is. But his arm, his talent level, because of his size, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say he's a better thrower than Mahomes or Rodgers, but he's 6'5", 240. And that kind of size is a trait.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, you're probably going to say nice stuff with Kirk Cousins. And he has these games where he's unstoppable, but he drives me nuts because the brighter the lights get, the more he shrinks. But he tore up the Seahawks. You know, where do you land? I mean, let's take the Seahawks game, but where do you land today on Kirk Cousins?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, you know, I don't know Kirk Cousins. I've had people tell me things. I'm not going to go there because that's nothing I know personally, and I would never do that. But when you watch him play within the context of the offense that he's asked to run, he's an extremely efficient player. It's an offense that starts with a run game, predominantly outside zone. They're really good with play action boot. It defines reads for him. It defines throws for him. He's willing to make difficult throws in critical situations. Does he always make them? No, but he's willing to. So there's an efficiency to his game. I don't know what's in his head, so I can't speak to when he gets into the games that, you know, people always say they're big games, you know. So that's a hard thing for me to address, but he's been an extremely efficient player within the context of that offense since he's been there.
Yeah. Yeah, ask Pete Carroll. He carved him up. All right, Justin, that Justin Fields mess, who do we blame? What'd the film say?
Well, you know, all I can tell you is what the tape showed. I don't get into the other stuff. So what they tried to do was they tried to feature quick game throws as the foundation. Quick game throws meaning three-step drops, quick five-step drops, where the ball comes out, there's not a lot of reading involved. It's basically a one-read throw. They wanted to create opportunities for him to get the ball out quick. There are times he did that. There are times he didn't throw it. I know people have said there should have been more play action boot. The first design movement play came on his seventh drop back. Could it have come earlier? Maybe. But after watching that tape, at this point in time, this is not a statement, Colin, about his whole career. We don't know what he will become. At this point in time, he doesn't see things very well. He was locked in on reads. He didn't show any real sense of being able to eliminate what's not there, isolate where he should go. He played both too fast at times and too hesitant at other times. He does not yet have an innate sense and innate feel for what open means in the NFL.
All right. Sam Darnold went from awful to, oh, wow, he's 3-0. I'm a huge fan of Matt Rhule and Joe Brady, where a lot of his throws, people are schemed open. I mean, not everybody's covered. Now, he's made some difficult throws, but I really trust this group of coaches he's surrounded by. Now, Dallas is a much faster defense this year. They found a great, very fast defense, so this is going to be no – and he didn't have McCaffrey. But just kind of take me through Darnold, Cowboys defense. What do you project happens? What's the tape say?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that about the Cowboys defense. Much faster, much more active, much more multiple with their front look.
Yes, yes.
They're starting to move around Parsons and Gregory, who are standing up in what we call joker positions, moving around. So they've got some speed, some bend, some quickness. Darnold has improved greatly. They've helped him. You hit it right on the head. The reads are much more defined.
Yes.
The receivers are there for him to throw the ball. I think he's starting to get a little better in the pre-snap phase, noticing fronts, recognizing when he needs to change a protection. You know, he's a great example. You spoke before I came on about these young quarterbacks. He's in his fourth year. You know, it takes time. He's learning. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's now going to be great, Colin. Who knows? But you can see incremental learning along with a system that is helping him with defined reads and throws.
Yep. All right. Joe Burrow's on TV tonight. That means I'll be watching. Burrow against Trevor Lawrence. I'm going to take Joe.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Joe Burrow there. I do think he has a calmness. He has a confidence. I like the way he throws the ball. I mean, my eyes just tell me the kid's going to make it. He's going to make, I don't know the level, but I compared him when he was a college quarterback. I said he feels like Tony Romo a little bit to me. He can move. He can throw. He plays with confidence. You know, I'm not sure. Maybe he's a little better natural thrower, but what do you make of Burrow?
Well, you got good eyes, Colin, probably better than mine because I'm wearing glasses. But he's very refined. He's one of those guys that came into the league with a pretty refined sense of timing and rhythm in the pass game. The ball comes out. And I'll tell you what, he's throwing the ball with a little more juice this year.
Yeah.
You know, he'll never be a power thrower. He'll never be Matthew Stafford. But he's throwing the ball with a little more juice this year, and that shows up on tape. And he has a sense of being able to read and go through progressions. And they have a lot of weapons. And that leads us, of course, to the play that we wanted to show this week, which was a touchdown pass he threw to Ja'Marr Chase from a week ago.
Yeah.
So we can take a look at that play, which – you know, for a lot of people who just saw the play, it just looked like an easy touchdown. But there was an interesting part to this play. And what happened on this play essentially was this was four receivers were going to work to one side of the field, the boundary side of the formation. And that was what the initial read was. And the Steelers were playing cover one. That means they had a single high safety and they were playing man to man on all five receivers. So as this play begins, what happens is Burrow is looking to his left. That's the boundary side of the formation. There's four receivers there. That was the initial progression read. He didn't have anything. What did he have on the backside? He had Ja'Marr Chase working one-on-one against Joe Hayden. And actually, Chase makes an unbelievable move on his route. This is beautiful route running by Chase. Now, obviously, the protection is critical here because you need time to work one side of the field, come back to the other. You could see him look left, nothing there. Knows he has Chase one-on-one versus Hayden, comes back to it, easy throw, touchdown. And the one thing that really stood out to me on this play as well as Burrow was watch Ja'Marr Chase. Look at him beat a veteran quality corner with nuanced, detailed route running. Really good. He got Hayden turned around, and he's wide open. So this is an offense that's going to keep getting better and better, Colin, because they've got personnel. If their O-line can be solid, and by the way, I think Burrow is the kind of quarterback that can help an O-line with his sense of timing and refinement in the pocket.
Yeah, I like to watch him play. That's the best compliment I can give a quarterback. I like watching. He's a craftsman. He's got some real skills here. He's got good feet. He moves. I mean, he's fun to watch play.
I agree.
Yeah. And at times he makes it look really easy when he gets some decent protection. So Greg Cosell, 42 years, NFL film, so much good stuff today. Thank you, as always, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
What?
Remember when I was saying that the Dolphins should just offer anything and everything to try and trade up and get Joe Burrow?
Yeah.
And everyone told me I was crazy.
That's right.
It's too much to give up for him. But now
you just watch him
every other day. Well, there's a conversation about Deshaun Watson.
When you watch Joe Burrow tonight, and Herbert's got a little bit of this, when his protection's good, watch how easy he makes it feel. It's almost as if Joe is just kind of playing. He's just kind of play. It's like college or high school. He doesn't get tight.
He has a natural confidence to him.
Yes, you can watch him play. He's a fun guy to watch. You can tell he trusts his feet. He trusts his arm. It's not a swagger. I don't know what the word is, but when I said.
It's a confidence.
By the second game as a pro, I said, that's going to work. You can just tell. Romo had that. You could tell very early. Tony totally trusted his feet, his arm, his playmaking. He'd make a bad pick, and Tony didn't care.
I want to say it was Jordan Palmer that told us that.
Was that it?
I think so.
All right.
I don't want to misquote him, but I feel like he's the one that said that he just has, even recovering from the surgery is why I never have any questions about Dak coming back. There's just an innate self-sustaining confidence that they play with, and they just don't have a panic to their game. So Kyrie Irving is an NBA champ and a seven-time All-Star, but he might have a little bit too much going on to have any sort of appeal to other teams. According to Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix on his podcast, he said that the Nets guard might be seen as a negative trade asset around the league. He said the Nets are kind of painted into a corner. They can't really trade him. I was asking around to a couple teams just for their opinion on the trade value of Kyrie Irving. It's virtually zero. I mean, he makes $35 million this year, and he's unpredictable as you get. So why would you give up anything of value to get him back in return?
So Durant's kind of trapped now. Because unfortunately, Durant's a total gamer. Harden may have driven people crazy, but he was all in last year and wildly effective. This was always my knock. You traded Steph for Kyrie. The Harden stuff, I didn't know if it would work. I'm wrong. It worked. Harden Durant is great. My takeaway on this, I said this last year. Kyrie is the rare star. I would massively lose a trade. If you gave me a good draft pick and a good bench guy, I just want him out of the room. I think it's chaos with it.
Well, I mean, that's why it's kind of difficult to trade him now.
Right.
Because it's he does have an unpredictable nature to how he goes about his career. And look, if Kyrie doesn't want to play this year, doesn't want to get vaccinated and doesn't want to play, it's not changing my life.
Yeah.
Do I want him to play? Do I want to see the three of them healthy together in Brooklyn and see how that all works out? Yes, of course. But there's this idea that that Kyrie has created, that it's always like this attack on him. And you are what you habitually do.
You
got out of Cleveland's.
Yeah.
Then you went to Boston, didn't work in Boston. And I defended him in Boston because I'm like, you have a star, try and make it work. Didn't work. Now you're in Brooklyn and you're talking about missing all of your home games. At one point or another, you can say okay, it's not about basketball. Then it's not about basketball. And it's fair for people to say that. And I don't care if you're all in on basketball or you live your life and basketball is your job or any of that. But if you are trying to win a championship, that's not conducive to that.
I've dealt with difficult people. I've dealt with people that aren't always as serious as I'd like. But if you ever kind of move into a crazy town place, there's not a lot I can do. And with him right now, with Kyrie, the world is flat 2 years ago. And it's like, where are we going with this stuff? Where are we going? I just don't know. Unpredictable and indifferent.
And I don't think that Kyrie is a bad guy. Kyrie does great things in the community. He seems to get along with all of his teammates overall. It's not about that. It's not like villainizing the situation. But it is a distraction, and it is a big deal that you're having these conversations leading into a season where everyone is healthy and you're trying to win a championship.
Yeah.
This is something.
Of course.
There is something to this. So Trevor Lawrence and the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are 0-3, will be facing off tonight against Joe Burrow and the Bengals, who are now 2-1. And with Burrow and Lawrence starting, it marks just the second starting quarterback matchup in the common era of the last two number one overall picks. The only other instance was Kyler Murray when he faced Baker Mayfield and the Browns in 2019.
Let me guess the headline tomorrow. Urban Meyer's terrible.
Well,
Jacksonville's going to lose.
Jacksonville is going to lose.
Yes.
It doesn't bother me that they're going to lose.
Just if you're competitive and close, I'm fine with it.
Yeah,
be competitive.
What I'm looking forward in this season from Jacksonville is growth. And that's why I'm very interested in this game. Because although the Bengals are obviously better than Jacksonville at this point, there is something to this matchup. This feels like a matchup that Jacksonville should show a little bit in.
Yes.
And I'm interested. I think that everyone's overreacting a little bit to the Urban Lawrence thing. Yes, it was obviously a great story leading into the season,
yes,
but the expectations should have been low in this situation. Yeah. And it's because obviously Urban had a legendary college career. So he's not a young coach, but he is a new NFL coach.
Right.
And there is something to that. The game is tonight and the Bengals are favored by 7.5 on Fox Bet.
Can't wait to watch. I'll be home with chicken parm.
Just chicken parm.
Absolutely.
Tonight?
Chicken parm tonight, watching
tonight.
The entire snaps.
Start the chicken parm during halftime because it makes you sleepy.
It makes me. I'm out. I'll be going to bed at 8:40 tonight, max.
It's 8 Eastern on NFL Network tonight. So the Cardinals face off against the Rams this weekend, and Cliff Kingsbury is looking forward to seeing Matthew Stafford up close and personal.
Matthew Stafford's arm talent. Being from Texas, I watched him when he was in high school. It's legendary. I mean, he is a freak show at that position, and his skill set's really getting a chance to show in Sean's offense.
Yep.
I mean, it's working through three games. Passer rating of 129.8. That's second only to Russell Wilson. averaging 10 yards per attempt. Also only trails Wilson and has 9 touchdown passes, only behind Tom Brady. And, of course, he's been sacked 3 times in 3 games, so he's getting excellent protection.
Excellent protection. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Illusion or conclusion next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Simply Safe has big news. Just launched their new wireless outdoor security camera. Advanced tech. Get 20% off the new system. Go to simplysafecolin.com. All right, Joey, we're going to play a game of conclusion or illusion. Mm-hmm. So you're going to give me the standings of each division. Are we looking at something real? This is the conclusion. Or is it a mirage and things will eventually change as we embark tonight on week 4?
All right, the AFC East, conclusion or illusion?
Well, it's Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, Jets. This is a conclusion. It's a quarterback league, and the Bills have the best point differential in the league at plus 50. They have an offense averaging over 31 a game, and Josh Allen is the only quarterback in the division with a passer rating above 80. So if it's a quarterback league and you have a competent coach, you're going to win your division. The order, the Jets will be last. The Bills will be first. The rest of it I don't care about.
AFC West, conclusion or illusion?
This is illusion. The Raiders have won 2 games in overtime. That usually evens itself out. And the Broncos' wins are against teams that are 0-9. Let's talk about the Chiefs. They've led in 65 straight games. And the Chiefs are 6-1 in their last 7 games. So they're a play away from being a 2-1 football team. I am going to say the Chiefs will not finish last. This is an illusion.
AFC North, conclusion or illusion?
It has the Bengals in first, Ravens, Browns, Steelers. This is an illusion. The Bengals have been outgained this year. That's a big stat for bettors. The Browns have outgained their opponents by 500 yards. So Cincinnati, it's very difficult, despite having a good quarterback, to be outgained and pushed around and to remain viable. The Ravens and the Browns are going to move ahead of the Bengals here rather quickly. I do think the Steelers are worse than even I thought. I had them at 8-9, but the Browns and the Ravens are going to move ahead of Cincinnati quickly.
How about the AFC South?
Well, Tennessee currently leads, and then it's a bunch of nonsense. I think I could make the argument this is a conclusion. Now, it may not be in the perfect order, but the Texans and Jags are now starting like kids at quarterback. The Titans are the only AFC South team above 500, and the only team in that division, again, this is important, that has outgained their opposition. It's not just wins and losses. Like Cleveland is outgaining everybody. The Titans are outgaining everybody. That tells you the Titans are a real team. Now, I don't think the Colts will finish last, but Carson Wentz has multiple ankle injuries.
Yeah.
He will not remain healthy when he comes back for 14 weeks. I have concluded that Wentz's health is still a massive problem, especially when you consider his reckless style of play.
Yeah. NFC East, conclusion or illusion?
Right now, the Cowboys lead, only team with a winning record. I would say that's conclusion. So there's a couple of things playing in the Cowboys' favor. They are the only team in that division to outscore their opponents, which tells you right now they're the only competent team in the league. They have the highest graded offense, Joy, in the entire league, so it's not a mirage. They have the best turnover differential in the NFL. That tells you they have a veteran quarterback, Dak, who I think makes very good decisions in terms of when to kill a play, when to go to the right receiver.
Yeah.
So what it tells you in an offensive league is, and I do think Washington's still got a lot of football left, but when you are the highest graded, you don't turn the ball over, you're clearly better defensively, I think the standings are going to look something close to this. I still think the Eagles finish in last.
NFC West.
It's an illusion. I think Arizona, Kyler Murray is one of three quarterbacks in the league to throw a pick every game. Right now, it's a little bit of a honeymoon. It's working. Everything's working. Their schedule gets much tougher. They're underdogs at the Rams this weekend. I also think Russell Wilson, currently in last, has they've blown two 10-point-plus leads. So Seattle is leading and controlling games and then evaporates down the stretch. So Seattle's not going to finish in last place. I think Arizona pulls back a little. I wouldn't be shocked if the Rams won their division, but it will not look like that.
NFC North.
This is an easy one. This is the easiest one in the league. This is a conclusion. Green Bay's the best team. Bears have the second worst offense in the league. The Lions coach eats kneecaps, and they're just not a great football team, especially on the defensive end. They give up big chunks when they shouldn't. And the Vikings have a very low ceiling with Kirk Cousins. We know that. So this is the easiest one. Green Bay, by the way, this is important. The Packers have increased their passing yards and rushing yards in each game. So regardless of if it's the weird offseason or not, you can see very gradually Green Bay is getting back into form. They are gradually improving every weekend.
NFC South.
Now, right now, the Panthers lead. So I'm going to say it's a conclusion. Not because the Panthers are going to win it. But there's things happening here that tell you the Panthers are going to be viable. They have the number one defense in the NFL. That unless they have injuries, they're going to be in every game. So you're not going to ask Darnold to win shootouts. Darnold's going to be able to play mostly like he's been playing this year, and they're going to win a bunch of games. Tampa's going to be fine. They'll be at the top. You're seeing something with the Saints that's trouble. They've only had three, quote, big plays this year. This is something we talked about in preseason. They got no playmakers. I mean, so they need perfect drives. Well, Joy, Jameis Winston's not, you get a lot of big with Jameis. You don't get a lot of efficiency. So they don't have big plays. And that you're relying now on a lot of 12 play drives and brilliance. That's not going to win. And in terms of Atlanta, they have a negative point differential of minus 46 through 3 weeks. That's bad. So it's going to look something like that. Carolina, barring injuries on the defense, is going to win a lot of football games. They do not have to put Darnold in shootouts. They'll lose to Dallas, but it's not going to be 33-28. They don't have to play that way. Perform at your best with M-Drive, the supplement for driven men. Free shipping, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to mdriveformen.com. Lean up, get muscle, proteins, nutrients. We'll see you tomorrow.